A new take on the oldest kaiju to continue to build a connected universe is on the menu this week, but can the star power of Hollywood, Academy Award-nominated special effects, and a fresh origin story, will it be enough to make a monkey lover out of Miles? Find out with us as we return to the legendary Monsterverse and travel back to the 1970s. This is Kaiju vs. History, Kong Skull Island.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your hot dog loving World War II pilot Miles, and joining me is the embodiment of Loki and Captain Marvel fighting Nick Fury, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to talk about this movie. And I think I know the answer to this, but did you see this in theater? Did you end up seeing
it? No, because you and I were supposed to see it together.
Yeah.
And we failed to do so.
Like one time you come up to visit up here in Boston, and it was for PAX weekend. And you mentioned there's like a bunch of stuff that come out same time.
I remember this being a wild time. It was like, did Logan come out the same weekend?
It was crazy. I feel like that spring of Skull Island.
Yeah. It was Beauty and the Beast, Logan, Power Rangers, and Kong like all came out within like weeks of each other. And unfortunately, Power Rangers is the one that suffered the most, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation that I'm not going to get into right now.
It's wild because I did see Power Rangers in theaters, but I did not see this movie.
Well, and the thing is like, I was still unsure how connected this might be to the Monsterverse. I am historically, as you know, not a big Kong guy. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I missed this one when it came to theaters. I was interested in seeing it just because of the cast.
Oh, boy. What a cast. I mean, is any kaiju movie ever going to have as stacked a cast as this one had? Just really like crazy the people that they got for this. I mean, these folks were really at the top of their, I mean, we'll talk about the cast later, top of their career, and pretty much a unknown director at the
helm,
Rob Roberts.
I had seen his independent coming of age movie, The Kings of Summer.
Yes.
And very really liked it. Yeah, really, really liked that back in the day.
Such a weird, like, that movie to go into this huge, big budget, special effects driven, star-studded film.
Yeah, but you gotta think about how they continue to think is snatching up a small acclaimed independent director and throwing him into your big budget thing because the idea is that you can possibly control this person more, or they might bring something fresh. I mean,
so that's the Marvel Nolan method.
Mark Webb, like Joss Whedon, like you have this is something that happens a lot. I mean, heck, Ben Wheatley does mm-hmm. the Meg sequel. Like this is something we see
craziest. This one is very much the Marvel method. The Marvel has a lot of kind of low budget horror directors as well that they bring into the fold. But the most famous Marvel directors now, the duo, you know, started with the paintball episode of Community,
which is one of the best episodes in the entire show.
But that's action, and you know, this director is very much in a different genre with his film.
You know, Mark Webb went from 500 Days of Summer to Amazing Spider-Man.
That was a weird lateral move as well. But
I mean, that first movie's great. But yeah, this is obviously, yes, they gobbled up an indie director. And this person has gone on to like kind of maintain some nerd cred. They've been attached to the Gundam franchise. I think it's been revealed he's no longer involved with the project, but he was going to do it for Netflix. He has appeared as the film director in Death Stranding, but also he did a Destiny 2 commercial, which means he will be forever endeared to me.
Yes. Jordan Vaught Roberts, you know, in my research for him, I just want all the best for this guy. I want him, his projects to come to the forefront. He's still on the books to maybe do a Metal Gear Solid sequel or film version with Oscar Isaacs as Snake. And oh boy, I will be first in line for a ticket for that. But I also want him to come back to the MonsterVerse. Like, boy, howdy, give this guy another film. Because spoiler warning, this is one of the best directed kaiju films. Like, boy, howdy, do we get a feast for the eyes at the very least.
Oh, absolutely. I fully agree. But before we get into any of that, Patrick, gotta tell me, what's in the title?
A good deal. I think the better question you ask is what is not in a title? And very purposefully, we discover, you know, in the course of this film, Khan in this movie is not much king of anything. And
despite what Steve Brule says,
well, and despite the the tagline of "All hail the king" for this film, he's not called King Kong at any point, or it's not in the title at the very least, I should say.
Yeah.
Like you said, they say he rules as king around here, but they don't call him King Kong in any of the MonsterVerse films because it's just Godzilla versus Kong. And
it's pretty clear that he is King Kong.
Well, finally gets kind of his kingdom in that film as he takes one over, usurps another monster. But yeah, I think the best part of most Kong origin stories is interesting that it finally gets kind of second billing in this title. In Skull Island is the subtitle here. The movie was originally just going to be called Skull Island, and I think maybe people got, producers and whatnot, got cold feet about that, so they added Kong on top of it. But I think that works. It works as a title here because it is really a mesh of being about Kong and being about this creepy, crazy island, which has not been the main feature of any Godzilla movie really since Son of Kong. Like, Kong never gets off the island in this film, which also has not happened since Son of Kong.
I'm honestly fine with that. I there's so many choices that are made in terms of like what they do with this movie that I think works. I like that this is not a remake of King Kong. Like that to me is the biggest strength this movie has, is, and again, not something that was really communicated by some of the trailers, because, you know, I still wasn't sure what they were doing. And by not calling it King Kong, I should have, you know, figured that out. You know, yeah. Skull Island is a great subtitle, but it still wasn't clear to me as to what they were doing, especially as someone who's not a big Kong guy. And it's so funny because I remember mentioning that to my fiance, and she was like, well, why don't you like King Kong? Because she grew up like loving the 76 movie. She watched it with her dad all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I'm just not a big fan of like big monkey movies. And it's really funny because like my nickname for her is Monkey. And so she's like, wait, she goes, monkey. Wait a minute. And this is like at that point, like 8 years into the relationship.
What are you telling me now?
And I was like, no. It's just like, I'm not a big apes. Like, I'm not a big fan of the big ape movies. And
small ape good, big ape bad.
With some exceptions, but like, this is one that like, I wish they communicated a little bit more that this was going to be something a little bit different than we had seen before. Mm-hmm. And because I would have liked to have seen this on the big screen, but I think from here, I think you're just going to hear a lot of gushing.
Well, I was about to say, I don't think you're a King Kong fan, but I think you might. I think you got to be a Kong fan. This legendary. So, yeah,
legendary Kong is my favorite version, without a doubt. And I can finally we can talk about it a little bit more. I'm sorry. Did you even say the other names of the that you have written down here for the movies? Well,
there's not that many. This is obviously like one of the widest released Kong films, but almost all of them translate to Kong Skull Island. In Chinese, it does translate to King Kong, as well as the Japanese title is Shingu Kongu, and which is giant god or giant kaiju, giant god of Skull Island. So Japan and Miles, you got to take a look at the Japanese poster for this movie is one of the coolest posters. Boy, howdy, why don't we get stuff like this? Look at the Toho Kingdom.
Oh, man, that's like, super fun. It reminds like me of the King Kong
monster. Yeah. It's like every monster and like Kong, it really does feel like
this sells the movie the so 70s. Well.
Yeah, it reveals a whole bunch. But like,
I gotta see if every single copy of that's dope.
It's great. Every single monster in the film is on the Japanese poster.
I love the IMAX poster because it is just Apocalypse Now, which I mean factors heavily into kind of Samuel Jackson's character. I thought would be like on paper, I was like, oh, that's too on the nose. But like actually in execution, they do it really, really well.
If they had sold it more as that kind of film, like maybe I would have seen this in theaters by myself. But yeah, we really goofed up not watching this together. We should have just like left PAX early and be like, see you guys.
We absolutely hindsight's 2020, but we definitely like goofed. But I also think like of the group, like I think no one else was interested in seeing Kong except the two of us. And we had like that was like the big year. So like all of our friends were there. So it was like 10 other people. So
we should have ditched them. So I that's the other thing. The fact that this was a period piece, I was like, oh, well, can this be very connected to Legendary's Godzilla, which takes place in the modern age?
That was the big question mark.
And obviously, originally, this film wasn't intended to really connect in. And we'll talk about the process of writing this. But yeah, this takes place in 1973. And there is something that dates it, I think, specifically to February of 1973, like Nixon's speech. But it is right after they pulled troops out of Vietnam. So the war would still go on for a while. The fall of Saigon wasn't until 1975. But I did think that the war was over, but technically it was still going on when this movie is going on. So, but yeah, the soldiers are pulling out and they get pulled in for this last kind of mission to guard people as they explore Skull Island. It is a pretty cool Vietnam movie, and it's got a lot of bona fides, a lot of chops that are in its favor. Part of it is the soundtrack of 70s
revisiting this films. Movie, I am shocked at the number of like licensed music in
so
this movie.
Many needle drops, some of them diegetics, some of them are like the soldiers are like listening to Creedence Clearwater Revival or what have you, but like there's Jefferson Airplane, the Chambers Brothers, Black Sabbath, the Stooges. Black Sabbath
and the Stooges being there and David Bowie. So good. Like, yeah, this is rocking. This is a fantastic soundtrack. It's actually, so what sucks is, and this happens a lot in modern soundtracks, is if you were to go to a store and if they had Kong Skull Island soundtrack on vinyl, it would just be the Henry Jackman score. They are not officially on the soundtrack, which sucks because it's a great little mixtape.
Yeah, the soundtrack itself is good. It is reminiscent of the time and like the kind of guitars, and Skull Island has like a cool kind of creepy motif to it. But like you said, it's done by Henry Jackman, who's done so many soundtracks, a lot of Disney stuff on his resume.
You know, Monsters what he did versus
Monsters versus Aliens. Yeah.
One of the greatest movies of our time.
His score was mostly replaced. I'm looking at Wikipedia here, by Mark Mothers, who's also a great, you know, composer, does a lot of kids shows.
Did Captain America Civil War
of Devo, who Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Some great Marvel, some great Disney films on his.
Ooh,
his
he was TV. A program. He was a synthesizer programmer for The Dark Knight.
But yeah, the boy, howdy, this movie looks good. It sounds good. The original script idea, I think it started right after Peter Jackson's Jackson. Kong film, because King Kong, they were planning to do a sequel Kong film, but maybe not in the same universe, but you know, and not by him. But part of the original idea for this film was to do another period piece set even further back, maybe in like World War One. So like the first script had like a World War One aspect, and then there was elements that were set in Vietnam. There's a version of the script that was in Vietnam, in kind of like an Apocalypse Now kind of setting. And eventually Legendary was like not on board with either of these until they really pushed the Apocalypse Now aspect to the Vietnam, in which case a version of this draft was kind of greenlit in 2015. And it had a lot of elements from some of the original ideas. Tom Hiddleston's character would eventually be just helping them try to find the giant monsters. As like originally he had a whole plot of, you know, what's funny is it sounds like what they're going to do with the next Jurassic Park Lost World, where like the monsters have something known as Titan Serum in this first script. Like they got the good stuff inside their blood that will help cure anything. But yeah, that was one of the original plot points that they had. And
yeah, one of the things that kind of got erased in drafts, which is one of like we'll come up in the technical stuff, but like one of the kind of weaker points to the movie is to me is I really wish there was a little bit more time fleshing out kind of our main characters, specifically I'm blanking on the names, Mason Weaver and James Conrad, and the writer talked about that, like, you know, Bree's character was somebody who was really war weary and had taken photographs for far too long, and she didn't believe in anything. So the first time that she sees Kong, it's like an awakening. She comes back to life. And Tom's character was a guy whose unit had been attacked by a big monster out in Vietnam. So he was in search of this thing. Instead of them approaching him at the bar and giving him a job, I had him like, I want on board. I liked those characters a lot. But they didn't want to go with that, which I do think is a mistake, because I think the one of my criticisms about this movie is that the characters, especially those two, they're well-dimensioned enough, but I feel like they're missing kind of that the real meat and potatoes to give us like heroes that we eternally fall in love with. And yeah, because I mean you have Tom Hiddleston and you have like, you know, Brie Larson, who on top of like being like one away from an EGOT,
she had already won an Oscar at this point, right?
I believe so.
For The Room.
Yes, I believe she'd already won her Oscar. I don't know if she'd won her Emmy yet. Like all she needs is a Tony, and like also combined with the fact that she might be the reason that the hard eyes emoji was invented. Like an incredible talent, and you know.
Oh yeah, that hard eyes emoji. So important.
I mean, I love Brie Larson so much. Yeah, but I mean, you have an incredible cast, and I think they give you enough in context and in body language for Sam Jackson's character. I think
is
the clearest, and like that Apocalypse Now thing where like they do such a great job of not beating you over the head that like until like some of the sequences in the third act that it's like it's very subtly pushed throughout that like this is an Apocalypse Now situation, like from the very beginning where he's so eager to take one last mission, like the war is never going to end for him. And yes. I love how that's done. You have John Goodman, who's a little more rougher around the edges than we typically see with nowadays with his character. That's been kind of retroactively done.
Yes. Yeah. They pretty much retconned a lot of his character with, spoiler warning, the Legacy of Monsters TV show. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's like they didn't know that they were going to do some projects.
It's still wild how well so much of it works in context with everything now.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I think that this script, I think you have a strong set of characters. You have you have a murderer's row of talent in terms of like your cast.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like one of the best casts. Like I said, would it surprise you to find out that director Jordan Vogt Roberts had originally like about 3 hours worth of a film and had to cut like an entire hour out?
It wouldn't, because like it makes me feel like there's any problem that I have with this movie is in the fact that like, oh yeah, I just want to get to know these characters a little bit better, and then hearing the writer say, yeah, we wanted to do that and they wouldn't let us.
He is definitely his own worst critic, because he cameoed in the Honest Trailers YouTube video. Like, oh, he was in it as himself. Like, it's, you should definitely watch it, but he's surrounded by Kong Skull Island merchandise, and he talks about how there are probably too many characters in like a normal movie. They would really condense some of these characters down, and he has like some of the biggest stars in Hollywood and gives them very little to do. Like, I love Brie Larson. I hardly remember her talking in this film. Like, she's just there.
She does. So that's the thing, is like, I get you not wanting to make her a damsel, but you still have these moments where she has a connection with Kong that we don't see fleshed out. And we really need to, like, can be different, but like, we need to see like some sort of connection, and it's there. It's on screen. He goes to save her on purpose.
Yeah, but and that's a very cool part. Yeah, I want more of her with Kong. I want more of her with Tom Hiddleston's character. I want just more of them together. They're so good. And like I said, it is so weird that there's all these Marvel actors in this movie. Well, and
but like, you have freaking like Mark Evan Jackson in there. Like, just it feels randomly,
there's some great comedic actors in this movie. Obviously, John C. Reilly is like one of the best characters in any MonsterVerse film. He is so funny.
We're all going to die together. You know, you're a good group of guys to die with.
He gets the one F-bomb in this movie, and supposedly it was ad-libbed. He's like, yeah, they sound like birds, but they're not. They're ants. They're big effing ants. God, funny.
Rutherford from Lower Decks, Eugene Cordero, is in this movie. He doesn't say much, but like, I zeroed in on him, like, oh, we got a Lower Decker.
So many great kind of character actors in smaller roles, some great soldier actors that died pretty darn quickly, and one of which, Tony Cabell, who it seemed like he was supposed to be almost like a main character, but he gets separated from the rest of the soldiers and like dies pretty quickly. He also did mocap for Kong's like facial expressions. He'd come off of doing Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, where he did mocap for it.
He had just come off being Dr. Doom in the 2015 Fantastic Four film.
Oh God, was he in that?
He's Victor Von Doom in that movie.
I think I've blocked that movie out of my memory.
I think that movie gets more flack than it deserves. Like, it's not great, but it's fine.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely. We've had a couple of legendary movies since then, and none of them have had as stacked a cast as this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there have been attempts. I mean, I will say you have had known actors. I mean, King of the Monsters definitely gives you a bevy of known actors.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great actors.
Are they as celebrated as the ones in this movie? Probably not.
There's no Sam Jacksons, you know.
I mean, You say that, but there's no Sam Jackson. That's but you do have, like, you know, Charles Dance in there, Kyle Chandler, freaking Eleven from Stranger Things.
Yeah, she's probably the biggest one in those next two legendary films.
Ken Watanabe has a bigger part.
Why doesn't Tom Hiddleston get more action movies? He was great in this. He's so good.
You know, I think it's because like they tried to cast him in that kind of stuff post Loki.
I feel like, yeah, they tried to.
They just didn't do very well.
I think he's been shoehorned into certain roles or not given certain opportunities. He was great in this. Like I said, Brie Larson was great. John C. Reilly, so good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great. I also like, I really love, to go back to like the kind of crux of this movie, I like the plot. I like that it's very different from. We're not a movie expedition like, you know, John Goodman, which, yeah, John Goodman, freaking great in this movie, retroactively resurrected by Monarch, the show, not the group. But I love this idea that we're like, okay, here's this character who was part of a group that we have briefly seen in the last Godzilla movie. Okay, there's our connection there.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of going to be it. And then it's this whole thing that these things exist and we need to get on top of this. And we certainly need to get on top of this before the Russians do. And that's a great log line of like, okay, this is why we're going to the island. And we need a crack team. We need people who are trustworthy in terms of like, all right, let's get this renowned war photographer. Let's get this like, you know, legendary tracker
team that's assembled here. And there are some other Monarch people, and they lay some groundwork in this movie of like the Hollow Earth, which obviously becomes a huge point in Godzilla versus Kong. I really just needed them to have that forethought of like mentioning Godzilla, because obviously Bill Randa has seen Godzilla like with his eyes, right?
Yes. I mean, well, and we know that now because
he thought it was he thought it was killed or destroyed by the A-bomb. So maybe that's why he didn't mention it. But he could have been like, yeah, I've seen tons of giant kaiju in my time.
Well, the thing is like, I was explaining this because even in the show where we see the context of Bill Randa has seen Godzilla, they also know Godzilla's. But we also see that the Monarch has always been kind of, its real identity has been kind of super secret. And that is something that we see a lot in the Apple TV show. And so it is not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, a senator who was not privy to the confidential stuff that really happened in the 50s would look at them as fringe. And the government's like, yeah, this stuff hasn't happened in a little bit, so let's not worry about it until, you know, 2014 happens. So I really do like a lot of this, and a lot of it does still work by and large. Like, they retconned a couple things, like Bill Randa's apparent demise, to give him a new one that may not have stuck. We'll see in season two. But I think that so much of what makes this work is, you know, we had kind of mixed feelings about the stellar production of Peter Jackson's King Kong. But, you know, that movie is, what, at this point, a decade removed, and or maybe 12 years removed. So for me, unlike doing, you know, Kong is interesting because Kong, a lot of times, you know, he gets a remake of his origin and then a sequel. You know, King Kong, Son of Kong, King Kong, Kong Lives, and then the King Kong Peter Jackson movie. We don't have a lot of other Kong movies. And we have the two Japanese films, King Kong Escapes, and is there a second one or is just the one?
No.
Oh, Godzilla vs. King Kong.
Yeah, that's the original, but that's technically the same Kong.
Yeah, so we have a completely different approach than anything we've done before, which I really, really appreciate as someone who, obviously, like, I want to see it done well, maybe once or something like that, but I just, I'm not a big King Kong guy, so this different angle is very cool.
Yeah.
And I like that we're going into Skull Island in a different, like, it's not just a bunch of, like, hapless things. We're going to have a bunch of super racist analogies of native peoples. There is a native people here, and they have
But really cool design of their village. I think that those sets were done in Hawaii, but they have like, they've built around like World War II wrecks and like ships and stuff, and they have their own kind of like giant walls to keep not just Kong out, but like other, there's so many giant monsters on this island. Well,
and they say it's not really for Kong, but for the other things.
Yeah. Kong is kind of like their cool dude on the island, but
the Samuel L. Jackson.
But yeah, there's so much good stuff to talk about in this film. We've talked about the cast. I wanted to bring up, originally Adam Wingard was selected by Peter Jackson to do this new Kong movie, which, you know, we will see him take on Kong later, but he would have done a great job.
Guillermo
del Toro was also suggested, but yes, Jordan Vaught Roberts came on in 2014 to helm this, and like I said, went through a lot of different scripts, but this is what they ended upon. I think the period piece element of this maybe was something that turned me off originally, but It is so good. It is such a smart idea to do basically like a Captain America First Avenger kind of movie for this universe. And we will see them go back to that well with the Legacy of Monsters TV show, but also have their cake and eat it too, because that's, you know, two different time periods.
And there's like there's so many different time periods.
In one of the script variants, one of the scripts for this movie, something that they were going to do as well, and like start with Vietnam and then bring Kong into the modern Godzilla era. And obviously that's the, you know, where Kong ends up. Let's talk about the monster. Let's talk about Kong. The director said, you know, they wanted, quote, it to be a throwback to the 33 version, a movie monster. And we worked really hard to make, you know, with some exaggerated features, some of the cartoonish and iconic qualities, and then make them our own. I enjoyed this design of Kong a great deal. Mm-hmm. But the next version that we get is like so much cooler, in my opinion. This one's I fully agree. It's very generic, but it is definitely one that works in the MonsterVerse. This is the largest version of Kong, I think, at this point, 104 feet tall, which is a lot smaller than the Godzilla in the MonsterVerse. But they talk about how, you know, this is 50 years before the Godzilla versus Kong movie. So he's still growing. He's like a teenager in this movie. Surly, yeah, teenager.
So I'm kind of with you. Like I generally like the Kong design. I think he's expressive. He's interesting. But they certainly perfect it in his next appearance. He's a little fuzzier. And it kind of has a beard quality to him. It just has more personality in his design than, yeah, it is kind of big monk here, but
it reminds me a good deal of the suit they made for the 76 King Kong, you know, both in colorization and in suit quality.
But I will say, I still think he does have the iconic kind of King Kong look to his face. I think he's amazingly rendered. He's a good looking Kong. So I do agree that like they do vastly improve upon the design, but I don't think this is super bad.
They frame his face in so many cool elements, like when the napalm goes off and he's like surrounded by fire staring down Sam Jackson.
Oh yeah. And one of the original teaser posters was of someone holding like a green smoke flare and the light kind of from the flare kind of bouncing off of the silhouette of Kong. Mm.
Yeah. So I think Kong is perfectly serviceable and is definitely different enough from all the other versions that it's like, oh, well, that's the legendary Kong. But yeah, they do change him up a good deal for the next movies. Let's talk about some of these other monsters. Boy, howdy. I do love the skull crawlers.
The skull crawlers are impeccably designed.
It's obviously a reference to the two-armed pit lizard from the 1933 Kong, which was, you know, not a kaiju size monster. It was like a 6 foot long half snake, half bipedal kind of armed creature. But yeah, there's the director also took influence in No Face from Spirited Away.
I can see that.
The First Angel from Evangelion, I'm guessing the TV show, which was bipedal but had kind of like a big, almost like elongated skull head.
Well, I think the brilliant thing about the design is, you know, they're constantly referred to as lizards, and then when your eyes are immediately drawn to the skull like mm-hmm. Protrusions on their face, but when you look at the actual design, you see their real eyes are actually a little bit further down the skull and the rest of their body is very reptilian. It's such an amazing design. And mm-hmm. because one, they're very fierce, they are directed and written like horror movie monsters.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes them so effective. And what makes a good monster villain is, yes, if you have a heroic monster, then you need to have something terrifying and vicious for that monster for your hero monster to fight. And of course, Godzilla is different and is written differently, but Kong is traditionally a hero monster. And I love how they, one, justify why he basically eradicates most of the squadron, because they're dropping charges on his island. Mm-hmm. And we also get the information like, oh, yeah, those charges basically wake up more of these things, including the big one. And it's like, yeah, OK, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And potentially opened up ways for them to escape from underground or from the hollow earth, maybe.
And Kong doesn't delegate. He's like, oh, this is happening, I'm going to destroy that thing.
Yes. And a great homage to Kong taking out the biplanes or jets or what have you, whatever, whatever he does. Him smashing these helicopters in like the first action sequence. It's one of the coolest things that's happened in Kaiju. Oh, boy. He's him smacking and throwing trees and rocks. It's when so that
first
good.
Tree comes in as a surprise, you're like, oh, boy.
Oh, that's the most horror kind of jump scare in a lot of Kaiju films.
No, not to my fiance. The giant jump scare was the giant spider.
Oh boy, that thing!
She is terrified of spiders, and that sequence. It's the way it's designed and its movements, which really they did a phenomenal job of like imitating an arachnid. But like the fact that it's like, oh yeah, they're chopping on its legs, and the legs are so juicy, and
it's like, got it's, the.
And it's got the half-life thing
that it like drops down like it's yes. like little tentacles almost and like pulls the one soldier up and he's got to like machete those off.
Well, and that's cool because it wasn't horrific. Like webbing. It was like some sort of organic like thing. It was almost like an appendage. I
enjoy
monsters
that.
Are terrifying. And they're that's what makes it so good is it's they were so smart to write the other monsters in a way that would not be outside of a horror film version of a creature feature. And
I mean, it's that whole pit sequence from Peter Jackson's King Kong, like come to life and done in very interesting ways. But yeah, they're still, I mean, the skull crawlers are really the only like huge kaiju level size creatures, but we have like a giant squid that is also massive, a big old water buffalo that has a lot of character to it, and it's building up this universe of giant sized creatures that I really appreciated. The one thing I didn't like the leaf wings that much. They're small scale. They're like little dinosaurs.
I liked them, the little pterodactyl guys, because I liked them only because when they do grab one guy and you see one just kind of like slice through his arm, I'm like, okay, these things
that was
are
horrific
else.
But yes, yeah, just like in a movie of like everything is giant, like they're so tiny by comparison. But you know what I really appreciate is in my favorite sequence of the film, where they're in the graveyard, we do see Triceratops skeletons and like dinosaur skeletons, but
Kong's parent skeletons.
Yeah, that's so dark. Yeah, the poster that you just showed me, the
which
one you're
also
talking about is awesome.
Retroactively, I think, kind of retcon, because I think what they say in, well, no, I guess it's not retcon, but like his actual people are connected to the Hollow Earth stuff, which they do reference here.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of world building, but I love that sequence that, you know, it is another nod to the 1933 King Kong, where there's dinosaurs on this island. We never see them, but, you know, I think we're led to believe the skull crawlers helped destroy maybe a lot of these. They killed a lot of the Kongs, and they look so good. We get to see kind of like baby ones, and then we see like the big one that fights Kong at the end. And I love them. They come back a little bit in the MonsterVerse series, but I would like to see even more just cool new designs, you know?
Yeah,
cool monsters.
I agree. I think they took full advantage of, oh, okay, we have a Lost World situation. Let's do it. And I think it was very incredibly done. In some ways, I'm like, this is what I would have liked a Kong animated thing to be like do it kind of like Singular Point, but with someone exploring this island, and I think you have yourself a stew.
Spoiler warning, there is a Skull Island animated show.
I heard there is, and I've heard that's pretty good, which is a far cry from every other animated Kong thing I've been forced to watch. So we'll see. I'll put a pin in that for now, but
it just came out so much later than this movie. It came out like 2023?
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, it's fine. I mean, there's a lot of stuff involved with the MonsterVerse and making it work. I love the superior piece, because it also, this is before we get any of the current Monarch stuff. So I don't know if any of these characters make it. I don't know if, you know, so that does generate some excitement, because, you know, I don't know if Hiddleston's going to make it this movie. I don't know if Brie Larson's going to make it. I remembered, because I hadn't watched this in almost a decade. For some reason, I thought John C. Reilly didn't make it. And then I was like, oh, no, he does. Oh, great. No, I love this.
He gets a happy ending.
He gets his hot dog and his beer and his. Oh, I would have liked like, oh, TV's in color now? Like, this man has not, I don't even, has he seen a TV?
Oh my God, yeah, there's TVs in World War II. My favorite, first of all, there are so many amazing lines in this movie. There are so many absolute hilarious, like, one drops. We haven't even, like, talked about him at all, but Shea Whigham is just a great character actor. He plays one of, like, the corporals or whatever it is. Has a hilarious death in this movie, but he's eating, like, right after the helicopters go down, and it's like, how can he eat at a time like this? He's like, eating for the living. The absolute, oh God, what was I talking about the great lines before?
I got one. So,
oh yeah, no, let's just go through some. What was yours?
The one that got the biggest guffaw from both of us when I was watching this is the it might be a little pandering, but the, as usual, remember, hold on to your butts.
Oh yeah, that's so silly. Oh yeah,
it's so silly, but like the Jurassic Park throwback and being in a literal lost world is pretty great.
Everything out of John C. Reilly's mouth is one of the funniest things in the movie. But he also has like cool lines where he says in Japanese, "Death before dishonor," before like wielding the samurai sword.
Great line. It's
absolutely so cool. Oh yeah, they're going through. It's such a Captain America scene because it's like he's been frozen in time. John C. Reilly. They're like, oh, yeah, we put a man on the moon, and he's like, well, what'd you do? You just leave him up there.
I also love what happened with the war. Did we win? Which one? That makes sense.
Oh my God, just it's so good. Everything about his character. It's and that's how the movie starts. Is him and this Japanese pilot landing on the island before getting kaiju interrupted. I would say this movie is very similar to the 1976 King Kong, but that movie is so focused on the oil company and, you know, the profits of taking Kong out of the island. This one is, you know, purposely much more like Apocalypse Now. It's got elements of your Full Metal Jackets or Platoon, those kind of Vietnam era movies. But yeah, this is Samuel L. Jackson as
Kurtz.
Yeah, the psychopath who is, you know, his mission is very different from Kurtz. Kurtz, it's been a while since I've seen Apocalypse Now, but Samuel L. Jackson just is representing Kong as the Viet Cong, you know, as the enemy that he's not willing to lay down and retreat again from another battle.
It's so interesting because unlike Kurtz, who sort of like, you know, we're told like kind of lost it while he was in Vietnam, you get I feel the way they represent Samuel Jackson is he is more representative of like the industrial and military complex. Like he was already the way he was. Like you see him, like he is licking his chops for another fight, and his platoon is supposed to be shipped home. And that's why he's like, when he gets off the phone, he's like, oh, thank you, sir. Like he's thanking him for another opportunity to fight. This man is an eternal soldier. He's eternally at war and he's looking for enemies.
He gets so excited when they find the bloody handprint of Kong, something that will come back in Godzilla X Kong, the bloody handprint where he's like, if it bleeds, we can kill it. Another a great Predator reference. But
one of my favorite lines in the movie is when they're in the helicopter and Chapman goes, is that a monkey?
Oh my God, there's so many good ones. Oh my God, there's so many hilarious lines. It's so funny, but all the good lines are not by the main characters. You know, they're all these secondary characters. Brie Larson and Tom Hiddleston are given so little of these fun elements.
Mason Weaver has a couple of good lines.
They give her more in the, I mean, once they get to the island, it seems like she's mostly, you know, quiet, or they give her a lot of exposition kind of stuff.
I love the post-credits. I promise I will tell the Russians.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's characters. I wish we could do more with them, but you know, they're like in their 70s or 80s when
also
the MonsterVerse is going on, but you know, we have a way to stop people from aging in the MonsterVerse. Just say they went to the Hollow Earth, you know, just say that there's a mission in the 80s to the Hollow Earth.
Sure, we're going to get something. But I will say Tom Hiddleston does get a great line because at the beginning of the movie where he's like, an Uncharted island. I'm gonna list all the ways you're gonna die, and like, that is a great like introduction to his character.
Yeah, I really like his character. You have a favorite scene in the movie, Miles? I've several. I have so many, but
I have a lot. This movie is, I mean, it's a constant thrill ride, and it's in a way it feels like you're on a Universal ride or something, in the best way. There are sometimes where you feel like you're on a ride and it's not a compliment. This is not that. This is everything you want. In the same way that people have commented that, like, in a positive way, Star Wars Skeleton Crew feels like a ride in the best way. This is that. And this is what this movie does so well to me is, one, it really does bring Kong to modernization. This is not a remake of a 1933 thing. It's not a reboot of that. It's okay, let's do Kong for a current audience. And I think that's why.
But it also has so many homages to like every Kong movie. It's crazy.
Because it, when done well, you can do all of those things. And so, yeah, it being this thrill ride, because for many of us, you know, since 1991 or whenever Universal opened, mid of 1990, like Kong has been ingrained into our culture as a Universal ride. Yeah. And I think this movie leans into that aspect. It's like, okay, well, let's give people a ride, because they were building a new Kong ride in tandem with this movie. I was in Universal in the winter or like the early part of 2016. It wasn't open yet. It was supposed to open that summer, a few months after the movie came out. And I mean, like they full on leaned into, yeah, Kong is an attraction. And this movie treats Kong like an attraction. I think to the detriment some to, you know, obviously our two title characters, our two heroes, but it's also so important that people connect with Kong, and so that when you see him again in 4 years in Godzilla versus Kong, not only do you have like a basis, because that movie is so, it hinges so much on the audience empathizing with Kong, because that movie could be called Kong and the Terrible, No Good, Horrible, Very Bad Day, because the facial expressions that little monkey has is like, just, it's so put upon, and it's perfect. To answer your question, as far as favorite parts, I have so much of this movie. I do like the graveyard sequence that you mentioned.
There's so much going on in there, from Randa's camera going off. Inside the skull crawler, there's flamethrowers, there's machine guns, a poison gas canister like explodes, or a whole bunch of them explodes. So yeah, my favorite sequence is Tom Hiddleston getting the samurai sword, the World War II samurai sword from John C. Reilly, grabbing the gas mask, and then slow motion through the poison gas, he's slicing through the leaf wings, just like shink, shink. I'm like, at this part of the movie, I was like, oh, this is excellent. This entire film is excellent. If it led to this scene, there's a machine gun on top of like the Triceratops skull, and it's just great. It's a great action sequence, and it's like the third great action sequence we've already had, and there's still more to come after this. It's so crazy.
Yeah, and I really love a lot of the quieter moments. I wish they could have been expounded upon. Like, I love the sequence where, you know, Brie Larson has that moment with Kong, that connection moment. I love the sequence where
when she's saving the water buffalo from the downed helicopter. It's good stuff.
Oh, good. And it, I also, great, speaking of the water buffalo, that moment where Tom Hiddleston like tells everyone, don't move. Like he seems to know. No, I know what kind of creature this is. Like I can tell, and from experience. And yeah, that thing gets up and walks away. And it's fantastic. There is so much about this movie that rules. In terms of spectacle, yeah, this movie is just a home run. I do wish, and we kind of harped on this a little bit, like I said, I wish the characters were more fleshed out and more present, so you had some people that you could really, you know, chew on outside of the villain of the piece, which is Samuel Jackson, who does an incredible job.
Yeah, and it's so simple, but he's so, and like, I understand his motivations, and you know, you kind of sympathize with him because of the, you know, what he says is the loss of his soldiers under his command, which, you know, he's not just talking about Kong. He's obviously talking about Vietnam as well.
He is. But that's the thing, where it's like he's looking for an excuse. He's looking.
Yes. You realize that while he is saying it might be partially about that, but it's more about him winning. And it's just such a great villain because of that. And him getting absolutely stomped by Kong is such a great death. It just gets squished. Well, I'm interested to hear your rating because I'm super positive about this.
I mean, personal, I haven't been negative about this movie.
I was about to say, personal enjoyment wise, I'm at a 10 out of 10. And I think I started when I first saw this movie at like an 8 or 9. But like I said, every time I've seen it since, I enjoy it more. And maybe it's because of where I know the series will go after this.
It certainly helps.
And Kong comes back. But this is just a great standalone movie as well. Like, it doesn't need to be connected to the MonsterVerse. I think it's a great Kong movie. Just a blast from start to finish. There's not really any slow parts of the movie. There's not any wasted space. I think if they had a 3-hour cut, I would watch it. But it probably... probably was cut for a reason.
I will absolutely watch a 3-hour cut.
Yeah,
any day of the week.
I really wish they would throw out some of those extended cuts. But yeah, like I said, if any complaint I had, it's I wish we had more time with some of the soldier characters because they die off so quickly after they're introduced. And I love them. Almost all of them are fun. Like I kind of. And some of them are just get divided from like the main group pretty quickly, too. So like they get very little interactions with the main characters. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, 10 out of 10 for me. Personal enjoyment. Miles, what about you?
Well, you know me. I'm not a big King Kong guy. And
this isn't King Kong.
I'm always harsher on the Kong movies. And, you know, I always kind of I tend to be a little more stickler for some stuff. But that's not the case here. I absolutely adore this movie. It is 100% from a personal enjoyment aspect. This is a 10 out of 10. This is such a fun, exciting thrill ride. And I absolutely mean that. Like I am watching with my fiance who had never seen it. She was just like, this has everything I can want. There are moments where I felt the actual tension, which speaks to how well directed this movie is. Like mm-hmm. There's some moments where you get the kind of, studio. Okay. This is the jump scares coming, but there are some genuinely good tense moments because of the kind of symphony of having amazing creatures, having people who know what to do with them and having a direction that takes advantage of the already existing tension given by those creatures. And I think it makes, in some aspects, it's certainly the best Kong movie ever made for me. And it's certainly a high ranking kaiju film for me in terms of just pure enjoyment. And as an adventure film, like you could not ask for a better pulp adventure film than this.
Yeah.
Like this hits all the marks. So yeah, 10 out of 10 every day of the week.
I mean, that's all they need to do is have the entire adventure on Skull Island, and it's just so good. Skull Island is so cool for its technical aspects. I don't think this is it not only is it the best looking Kong film or King Kong film, and that is a feat unto itself where we have, the Peter Jackson King Kong. We have so many
moments of brilliance. I mean, we both liked a lot of it.
The De Laurentiis has got, some very good looking elements to those films. And then the original 33, which is still almost 100 years later, just absolutely stunning for the time. But yeah, not only is this the best Kong looking film, I think this is one of the, if not the best kaiju films. It looks great. This holds up almost 10 years later, or 8 years later from when we're recording this. The locations, beautiful. They filmed a lot in Vietnam. I had it written down in my notes exactly where it was, but it looks like another world. It's dang. Why didn't I have this queued up? I forget the area in Vietnam, but it is so cool. It's such a location unto itself, that it does feel like you are in a lost world. The monsters are all great. The fights are all great. The final kaiju battle is just a real great, as Jim Ross would say, a slobber knocker of a fight. There are or wrestling kind of moves in the final battle as well.
And that's what the MonsterVerse has really brought into the kaiju in full, is what mm-hmm. I have always purported that I want from these things, is they should be like wrestling matches. And we have seen as these films continue to come out, that we are going to make them wrestling matches. Like in the most recent film, we see an actual like German suplex and clothesline, and I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want.
Heavyweight wrestling, you know, they're big, slow moving creatures, and they should be, you know, treating them their counterparts like that. And yeah, we got some great stuff between the big old bad Skullcrawler and Kong. Just all the visuals are top notch. The director is able to frame Kong in some of the coolest visuals, I feel like, in any kaiju movie, like the setting sun that's in a lot of the posters during the helicopter attack, the fire when the napalm goes off, the mist, Godzilla like moving through the mist and the water. Ah, there's so many good looking elements. I think it has some great dramatic, comedic action actors and characters in this movie, and they're all really firing at full cylinder. But yeah, for me, as far as technicals go, this movie is really tops. Like I said, maybe I would look some more time in the script for some of these characters, but it does what it is setting out to do, which is be a big monster action adventure movie. So giving it a 10 out of 10 as well for technicals.
All right. I'm going to piggyback on all the positive things that you were saying. I am much more critical about the fact that Hiddleston and Larson are kind of robbed of some character moments. I do think that that is my one big criticism of the film. It's the one weakness this movie really has. And it's one that kind of upsets me the more I watch it. This sounds like it's a lot bigger deal than it is, because this movie is still a rip-roaring adventure. Like, it looks great. The soundtrack's great. The score is very competent. The monsters are phenomenal. The battles are excellent. So while I do, this does keep it from being a perfect movie for me, so I am going to give it a 9 out of 10, which is still an incredible score. That character work was, I think, it's more noticeable because it keeps this from being a perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big one for me.
What about your, where it stands on the importance as a kaiju film factor? So,
we talked about this before we started recording, and it's the weird thing about this movie is this movie tends to be despite the fact this movie made $500 million worldwide, and despite the fact that it's part of an ever-growing monsterverse that has continued to be extremely successful and excellent, this feels like the scrappy underdog movie of the current kaiju generation. And it's weird because it's also one of the best. It takes everything about what makes King Kong great and does something different, which is, I think, to me, and it is apples and oranges in one aspect, but I think it's what makes this work so much better in ways that, you know, last week's Shin Godzilla doesn't, is the spectacle and the thrill ride aspect of a kaiju film, which is what we sign up for when we see a kaiju film, are basically they kind of switch things. Like, they did downplay the character stuff, but they put the kaiju stuff full throttle. And I think that over time, and I think it's going to take a little bit longer, this movie is going to rise in the ranks in people's lists. I think this movie, like I said, it's my favorite Kong movie of all time. I do not hold, I know some people just do because it's, you know, it was an academic achievement in film history, the 1933 version. It's never struck a chord with me. Neither has the character. This is the first time where I've ever cared about Kong is the Monsterverse. Mm-hmm. And I love this movie. I love these movies. I am a little, because it doesn't quite get the zeitgeist moment that it deserves yet. That cultural significance slides just a tad, but this does set up like the
so much good stuff to come.
everything that we have to come, and especially two Godzilla movies featuring Kong. Well, they're kind of Kong movies.
Yeah. I would definitely say the last one was so Kong forward, you know.
It is. So I'm not giving this a perfect score, but I am giving it a 9 out of 10 because this film is important. This film, they were already moving ahead with King of the Monsters when this was being made. But like, we didn't even talk about the post-credit sequence that like solidifies, here are these cave drawings we found of Godzilla and Godzilla fighting Ghidorah and Rodan and Mothra, like solidifying the biggest complaint everyone had about the 2014 film, outside of like the I think stupid, the human stuff isn't that great. The fact that like, why aren't we using the iconic monsters or any iconic monster. And then, you know, obviously we get that tease in this movie that solidifies not only is this set in the Godzilla universe, and we're kind of told, I think after King of the Monsters comes out, I can't remember, but we were told the end goal is to have Godzilla versus Kong. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, this is great. So yeah, 9 out of 10 for me. I do think this is a tremendous film. I think it's worth talking about more. Is it in my top 10? I don't know. It certainly could be, though. But this is just an incredible, incredible Kong movie. I assume that this is all 10s from you.
You know, I wasn't originally, because to be honest, I think Legendary Kong is amazing, but I don't think that character is here yet. In the same way,
I agree
that the Godzilla in 2014's Godzilla is not there yet. It is like a beginning of that character that we'll get to see more of in the next.
Fully agreed.
But still, I think if this was a standalone, not even super connected Kong, like, say if this Kong died at the end and like the next one was a different Kong, I still think this was an amazing movie. The fact that this is a little disconnected, like the Captain America film is, it mm-hmm. doesn't bother me that much. And on rewatch, like I said, I appreciate the Vietnam time period more and more every time I watch it. I just love all the little details of it being a period piece. And I love the fact that we go back to the 1950s in the TV show even mm-hmm. more so after this. I kind of want more, you know.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine like a kaiju, 1980s kaiju?
I want it so badly. Next? I think it'd be so rad. Get a good synth wave score and mm-hmm. like a promotional single by the Midnight, and you got yourself a stew.
So I really like Kong. I like him, and it's what they're going for to me, a solitary god. You know, he's the last of his kind in this movie,
yeah.
and he's super bummed about it. But I think this movie is 10 out of 10 importance for Kong. It rehabbed the character in such a way that it allowed mm-hmm. for the next two movies. And if we're looking at this and the next two Godzilla X Kong movies as like a trilogy of Kong films, they're almost all like near perfect yeah. films. But this one, like I said, because it can be perfect by itself, I think, I'll give this a perfect score. I was going to be like, oh, I can't say this is as good as like Gamera 3 or Godzilla versus Destroyer. No, this is as good as those movies. This is great. Mostly because I want more 10 out of 10 movies. And I can wholeheartedly recommend this to someone that wants to watch a Kong movie. I feel like this is like the best to give them, to introduce them.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it won't be the last time we say 10 out of 10 this season. I can promise you that.
But yeah, that puts you at a 9 out of 10. I'm at a full 10 out of 10. And it does make our final score for Kong Skull Island a 10 out of 10, just barely eking past, because I'm giving it a perfect score. I'm pushing it forward.
Yeah, they pitched it forward. Well, then maybe I'll lower mine to an 8. No, okay.
I add mine to an 11. That means it probably won't be on our top 10 list when all things are said and done, but it is up there. The last 10 out of 10 we had on the podcast was Cloverfield. And the same way you gave it a perfect score, I think, and I gave it a 9 out of 10. So
I think, did I also give a perfect score to Jellyfish Eyes, or was that a 10 out of 10 just personal enjoyment?
I don't think so. I don't think we've had, no, I gave it a soft 10 out of 10 to Legendary Godzilla as well, but it ended up at a 9. But yeah, 10 out of 10 for Kong Skull Island. Honestly, talking about it, I want to go back and watch it immediately again, and that's the sign of like, oh, this movie's got the goods for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one I own. It's a great one. And like, you know, my fiance turned around and was like, oh, I gotta show this to my dad. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
It's a dad movie. oh, for sure, he's gonna love it. But yeah, this is an incredible movie. It's so much fun, and like I said, it's certainly my favorite Kong movie ever made.
Solo Kong easily.
Yeah.
Easily. Right. So 10 out of 10. Not a perfect score, but pretty high up there for the podcast. That's going to do it for this episode. Miles, where can folks find us online if they want to gab about Kong?
You can email us at kaijuversehistory@gmail.com. You can visit our website, kaijuversehistory.com. You can visit the Cosmic Crit Discord. Just go to cosmiccrit.com. Go to the Discord. There is a Kaiju versus History channel where you can talk to Patrick and I and everyone else there in real time about Kaiju movies, about toys, about memes, because we post a lot of silly memes. In the meantime, you can rate, review our show, comment, share with your friends, let us know what you think, and check out our Letterboxd account to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Miles, thank you. Listeners, thank you. We're going to catch you next time when, after a very successful reboot of the live-action Godzilla series with an anime director, Toho looks to tap into that anime world even more so with not one, not two, but a trilogy of animated sci-fi films set in the future ravaged by the Big G. So tune in next time for History versus Godzilla, Planet of the Monsters.